A long time ago, in a continent far, far away, a great war was fought between two geniuses of the academic world. On one side, we had the extremely famous and also very well known Sir Isaac Newton. He invented gravity, discovered that things moved around, and crushed mighty giants by standing on their shoulders. And on the other side, we had Wilhelm Gottfried Leibniz, and he was German. Newton was born in 1643, and Leibniz wasn't. That's all I'm going to tell you about Newton, because he was famous, and you've all heard about him already. If you still want some more information, go look it up yourself. Leibniz was a German mathematician and philosopher. He dabbled in a lot of areas. And when I say dabbled, I mean excelled. He invented a machine that could add, subtract, multiply, divide, and calculate square roots. He planned a legal reform for the Holy Roman Empire, and advised Louis XIV on how to attack Egypt and weaken the Ottoman Empire. Of course, nobody really listened to these ideas, but at least he tried. He also did a lot of work on the binary number system, which is basically the foundation of computers today. Leibniz was ultimately aiming to create what would be known as an alphabet of thought. He wanted to create different symbols that could represent fundamental concepts, which could then be manipulated, much like in algebra. Anyway, back to the story. In 1665, Newton started mentioning to a few people a little idea he just had called calculus. It was a tool that would let you calculate lengths and areas and volumes of complex curved shapes, and would also deal heavily with rates of change and allow you to figure out things such as velocity and acceleration. It's also fantastic for torturing Year 10 math students with. Now, Isaac Newton's big mistake was that he decided not to publish any of these ideas. There could have been a couple of reasons for this. One reason was that Newton was actually quite reluctant to share his work with the public. When he originally published some work that he'd done on light and colour, he was immediately set upon by critics. Now, this is actually how science is meant to work. Scientists publish new ideas, and other scientists try to tear them down. If the idea can stand up to the criticism, then that probably means it was a good idea. Newton, however, took this kind of thing personally, because ultimately he was a bit of a sook. Another possible reason for Newton not publishing was because this all took place only 3 years after the Great Fire of London, and people at the time were a little bit more interested in finding food and a place to live, rather than buying maths books. Nowadays, there are around 50 billion sciencey and mathsy journals that researchers are allowed to publish in, but back in the 1600s, there were a lot less. These types of journals didn't really kick off until around the 1800s, and to be honest, that was mostly so that people could get credit for ideas, rather than for any noble purpose, such as trying to spread knowledge around the world. Anyway, in 1684, Leibniz published a book on calculus. Needless to say, Newton and his friends were a little bit surprised by this. Now, it was possible that Leibniz had come up with this calculus on his own, but they were still a little bit suspicious, and perhaps for good reason. Leibniz had visited London in 1673, and later admitted that a mathematical reporter known as John Collins had actually showed him some of Newton's papers. Leibniz said, though, that they were pretty much a load of crap, and he didn't really bother with them. Also, Leibniz had written a couple of letters to Newton, who had replied very politely, and in his replies he did make some vague hints about calculus, but there wasn't really enough in there to let people really understand it. Newton wasn't too worried about it, though, and in fact in 1687, Newton published his most famous work, Principia, and actually gave Leibniz some of the credit for his calculus. This would have been the end of it, except that in 1693, Leibniz made a terrible mistake. He publicly challenged the mathematicians of the world to see who could be the fastest to solve a particular question. His question was, if you were to roll a ball down a path and get it to stop at a certain point, what shape would the path need to be to allow the ball to roll the fastest? A few people, including Newton, managed to solve this problem using calculus. Leibniz's error, though, was to write a review of all of these solutions, and in his review he kind of, sort of, slightly hinted that Newton had actually used Leibniz's calculus to get his answer. Again, Newton wasn't too fussed about this, but his friend Nicolas Dullier got pretty upset. He basically accused Leibniz of plagiarism, which is a pretty major crime in the academic world. Leibniz had no choice but to fight back. He publicly refuted this accusation of plagiarism and stated that he was the true inventor of calculus. It was at about this point that Newton decided that he should probably publish his ideas, which he did, in 1704. Things happened really slowly back then. At this stage, though, the fight between the two was really just a few little niggly arguments. Newton had published his theory of gravity, which Leibniz, of course, had to criticize. He said that the idea of two objects affecting each other from a distance was basically magic. Now, this was an insult because magic isn't real. In this case, though, Newton would turn out to be correct. Newton was also devoutly religious, and he said that the universe was like a clock wound by God. Leibniz responded by saying, "Well, then what's the point of God, given that the clock doesn't seem to be winding down?" Newton had also discovered that while his theories of motion explained the orbits of the planets pretty damn well, there were still a few irregularities. He said not to worry though, God will sort it all out. Leibniz, on the other hand, said, "What a load of rubbish. You're just wrong." They also fought over their beliefs about time and space. Newton thought that everything was fixed, whereas Leibniz felt that everything was relative. Centuries later, it would actually turn out that Leibniz was correct in both these cases, but that wasn't until Einstein came along and figured everything out. In 1711, Leibniz appealed to the Royal Society in England about these accusations of plagiarism. A fair trial held by the Royal Society would normally have been a good idea, except for the fact that they didn't let Leibniz testify on his own behalf. Really, what had happened was that Leibniz wasn't very politically savvy, because who was the acting president of the society at the time? Newton. And who handpicked the members who would be in charge of the review? Newton. And whose side were they in favour of? Again, Newton. If this wasn't enough, when the Royal Society published the final report, they kept the name of the author secret, because the author of the final report was also Newton. As if that wasn't enough, later on a very pro-Newton summary of the report appeared in the publication Philosophical Transactions, written by an anonymous author. Anonymous as in written by Newton. Well, a couple of years later, Leibniz died, so you would have thought that Newton would have dropped his grudge. Well, no. He had just released his latest edition of Principia, where it turns out that he had removed all mention of Leibniz from it. Now, as usually happens in wars, neither side won. The British remained faithful to Newton and used his notation for calculus, whereas the rest of continental Europe used Leibniz's. This may not seem like that big a deal. They were both able to use calculus, they just had to write it down and express it in different ways. The problem was, however, that Newton's notation sucked. It was much more difficult to use than Leibniz's, which meant that fewer people were able to understand it. In fact, it's Leibniz's notation that we use today, with dy, dx and all of that jazz. Other than that, they were basically the same. This fight also pretty much kept Britain in the dark from continental advances for the next century or so, as they refused to accept any of Leibniz's work. Nobody knows for sure whether one man stole the ideas from the other. Most people simply accept the fact that they both came up with their ideas independently, which does happen from time to time. In today's world, anybody with internet access can publish their ideas as soon as they have them, which most of the time is a really bad thing. Hundreds of years ago, though, the spread of ideas through a community was much slower. Today, a video of a cat playing a piano can infect the globe before he takes his final bow, but in the good old days, said cat would be long dead before the next town over had even heard of it. You might argue that Newton came up with it first, and therefore he should get the credit. However, it was Leibniz who brought it to the public's attention and allowed it to be used, therefore advancing the cause of science. Also, like I said earlier, it's Leibniz's notation that we use, and not Newton's. In the end, however, Newton probably did come out on top. I mean, he's the one we've all heard of. When Newton died, He'd been made a knight, was given a state funeral, and was buried in Westminster Abbey. When Leibniz died, the best we can say is that at least his secretary showed up to the funeral. In Leibniz's favour, though, during this period the people on his side did produce much better mathematics than those on Newton's. And I suppose we do pay Leibniz some form of respect every time we use his notation. We'll probably never know the entire truth of this story. I like to believe that Newton and Leibniz, though, actually worked on the calculus together and invented the entire story of plagiarism just to stir things up a bit between the Germans and the English. And they've gotten along wonderfully ever since. Right?
My name's Adam Van Langenberg, and for more episodes of Mathematical Punch-Ons, check the iTunes store.